The following program brought to you by Comprehensive Financial Consultants and CFCI, which is solely responsible for its content. Securities are offered through J.W. Cole Financial, member FINRA and SIPC. Investment advice offered through CFCI and J.W. Cole Advisors. J.W. Cole Financial, J.W. Cole Advisors, and CFCI are unaffiliated entities. The opinions expressed by the members of CFCI and their guests should not be construed as specific investment, legal, or tax advice. All economic and performance information is historical and not indicative of future results. Investing may involve the risk of loss of principal, and any tax advice on the show is not intended to be used by any persons for the purpose of avoiding U.S. federal or state tax. Penalties that may be imposed on such persons and each listener should seek advice from their tax advisor or legal counsel on topics that arise from the show. The representatives of CFCI and their guests are not providing legal or tax advice, and nothing should be construed as a solicitation to offer or buy securities. Now enjoy the show.
1 minute and 10 seconds long, everybody. That is the disclosure.
Oh, I'm not used to that. You know, it takes a second to get all that out and quickly done and everything.
Back in the old days, of course, Jim Emmon Jr. is here with me again in the studio. Back in the old days, we just winged it. We never had a compliance review or anything. We just said whatever we wanted to say, took live callers. Wild, wild west.
And it wasn't that we were doing anything wrong. No, it was just a different way of regulation at the time.
I don't know what industry has more regulation than my industry. Maybe it's the medical industry. Maybe. I don't know. But there's a lot of regulation, a lot of moving parts, a lot to stay on top of. Like you said, you could be doing exactly the right thing, but ignorance is not an excuse. If you just don't do it, right, then you get in trouble. All right. Let's do a little review of last week, and then we'll talk a little bit about this week as far as just how the markets are reacting to different things happening. So last week we had falling bond yields, and that was spurred by weak economic data, and then that helped make stocks go up. So you might be thinking to yourself, okay, weak economic data, bond yields fall, stocks went up. Well, why is that? Well, investor sentiment turned positive last week as signs of economic softness were interpreted as a reason for the Fed to hold off on further tax rate or rate hikes. We had a downward revision in second quarter economic growth and fresh signs of a cooling labor market that reversed the trend that we've been on. And then after Chairman Powell spoke last Friday at Jackson Hole and kind of told everyone what he thought as far as where rates could go, maybe holding them higher longer, this gave some fuel to the fire that said, nope, they're going to go down sooner than later. Well, then we turn around this week and we had a really strong, this is a supply management index number, and it came out stronger than expected. And then we had jobless claims here on this Thursday as we're recording. I don't know what those are yet, but if the jobless claims come in, you know, high, that's going to be bad news, right? But it's good news for the market. Why? Because if things start to show cracks and start to slow down, consumer spending and consumer credits Friday, that'll come out, and we already know what that's going to look like. It's a disaster. Everyone's in debt up to their eyeballs right now. Card debt, credit card debt, student loan debt, you name it kind of debt, they're all in that predicament right now. But what happens now is when we start seeing a slowdown, the Fed will likely pivot at some point, maybe in 2024, and the market moves in anticipation of what's going to happen, not what's really happening. So when you think about the stock market, you think, well, that doesn't make any sense. It does not make any sense. When we're in this environment right now where bad news is good news to the stock market. So if you're shaking your head about, hey, I heard about this, but and the market's doing the opposite of what you think, that's what's going on. I think now, looking back, that the downturn in the market last year was in anticipation of what's happening right now. So now that we're looking a little bit further as far as things, you know, slowing down, the market's been reacting in a positive fashion. So you never know how far ahead the market's looking. You just never know. So that's why it's so difficult. But if you give yourself time, you know, stick in there, hang in there in the stock market, you're going to be fine. I know, Jim, I'm getting ready to record a commercial that you actually wrote for me, and there was a piece in here that I thought was really good. It said, have you really looked at your financial picture? Are you prepared for a retirement distribution, and how would that impact your taxes and all that? But here's the thing. Right now is probably the best opportunity I've ever seen in my nearly 30 years of retiring. because one, not the entire stock market's up. You might think it is, but the S&P 500 being up, driven by the mega cap companies, mega tech. But if you look at a more evenly based S&P, it may only be up, you know, 5 or 6, 7%. So there's a lot of catch up with some of these the old dividend payers, for instance. But interest rates are so high. I've never been able to buy 5 and 6% on a consistent basis under 10 years. And right now, if you really want to set yourself up, you set yourself up with the now bucket and soon bucket, which is where I take my money from for the next 10 years. You press the I believe the stock market will be higher in 10-year button or 11-year button, and you go with it. And then before you don't wait until your soon bucket's empty before you start filling it back up. You look for sweep and keep opportunities. If you have a really good year, like this was a bounce back year. I probably wouldn't do it this year, but it was a bounce back year. Maybe it's next year, maybe it's the following year. If you get a big year, sweep it and keep it. Always be building time horizon. That's the key when we talk about stock market investing is time horizon. How do you do that when you're retired? Make sure that you have 5 to 10 years teed up to be assured, contractual, however you want it to be, so that the market going up or down doesn't affect your distributions, but always be looking to reload that time horizon. So I call it a sweep and keep moment. And honestly, right now, we've been doing some of that because we've had such good returns, especially in the accounts that weren't down very much last year. And like I said, if you weren't in the S&P, you weren't down 18%. If you were in a bunch of dividend payers, you might have been down 8. Well, now you're up 10 or maybe 12. Yeah, go ahead and peel off a little bit and rebuild a year or two of income. So that's the way you do it. And that's my story, and I'm sticking to it. Jimmy, we got a couple sponsors that we always like to shout out to.
We absolutely do. Unrivaled Electric, they're your full-service electrical contractor specializing in generators and solar arrays. You can give Tim a call at Unrivaled Electric. He wants to be your electrician, 812-361-3604. You can always find them on Facebook. Excuse me. And also, thanks to Kenny Bland Auctions, your full-service auction service, offering pre-planning the sale of your estate or real estate. Visit them online at KennyBlandAuctions.com.
We're going to look at a house that he has for sale. It's on his website right now.
Really?
A potential rental property. You're going to look at it tomorrow. It's a great way to sell a piece of property, you know, because you can stick a sign in the yard. You can go in. I mean, I'm not ditching any of the traditional methods, but when you have an auction and someone has to come out and you and I, we want it. You only need two people in an auction that want something. And you and I bid it and bid it and bid it. Plus, normally it's a cash offer, so they have to have proof of funds and all that.
Right.
And it brings out the best price. And Dirk treats everyone really fair, and I'm looking forward to seeing what this house brings. Just a math problem if you're in the rental business. Just a math problem. What about Lance Lyke? We got Lance over there?
We do. Lance, I was saving for the end because Lance is going to be on the show in a couple of weeks. Attorney Lance Lyke at the Lyke Law Group. Give yourself and your family the peace of mind that comes with proper estate planning. Call Lance Lyke at the Lyke Law Group, 812-323-8300.
Having Lance on the 28th of September will be great. We're going to be talking about all kinds of stuff, basic estate planning. We're going to talk about trust. We're going to talk about Medicaid planning. We're going to talk about veterans benefits. Everything is going to be so great, so intriguing. I should answer a ton of questions, and hopefully the next week is going to be another question and answer show. So possibly out of the Lance Lyke show, you might have a lot of questions, and you'd want to email them to cfci.us. Just contact us. Jimmy will grab that email and put it on the plate. All right, it's September. It is Life Insurance Awareness Month, if you didn't know that. It's not again, one of these made up things. I know everyone makes up things. Like,
there's not a Hallmark
like
card.
Like Valentine's Day is made up, right? Arbor Day, don't say made up.
Yeah.
What else is made up? There's a lot of made up days. Anyway, September has traditionally been Life Insurance Awareness Month. So you might be thinking to yourself, do I even need life insurance? Should I have life insurance? I'm going to run through several reasons that you have to think about that maybe are a little bit outside the box. We'll be right back at Your Money with David Hayes. Man, that's sad to hear that song.
Jimmy Buffett.
I know.
I mean, we've lost like so many quality musicians in the last several months, but Jimmy Buffett kind of hits home because just the positive and beach and margaritas and all of the things. And yeah, and I didn't realize, I mean, I guess I took it for granted how many people he worked with over his lifetime. Because then you start scrolling through social media and you see him posed with Tony Bennett and Dolly Parton and all these different folks. And it's like, wow, never knew that there was a little collaboration here and there.
Well, next thing you'll hear, because every famous person, everyone knows about their estate. Did he have his estate in order?
Yeah, I don't know.
Because there's a lot of famous people, very wealthy people, that you hear later how messed up their estate is. So
Aretha Franklin, if I remember right, didn't even have a will.
Oh, and well, even like Michael Jackson's was kind of jacked up as well.
That's true, too.
So there's a lot of them out there. Anyway, sad to see Jimmy go. Iconic figure. I never saw him personally in concert.
Me neither.
I wanted to wear the parrot head. I guess you still can.
Oh, goodness.
All right. Well, it's September. It's Life Insurance Awareness Month. And a lot of folks are like, okay, why do you own insurance? Why do you own life insurance? I have a ton of life insurance, personally, just so you know. I'm not trying to sell you on a concept, an idea. Just want to put a couple things in your head. Most of the people think, well, you know, I'm married. I have kids. I need to make sure that if I die, you know, my house is paid off. I mean, those are some basic reasons. There's rules of thumb out there for most people. It's 8 to 12 times your annual income. It's about where you should lay when you're in that situation where you have obligations, you have a family. It typically covers everything. So people think, okay, well, I owe someone something. I want it to be paid off when I'm gone, so my family members won't have a burden to pay. What about self-completing a plan? This is another concept. Let's say you have a baby, and you're like, yeah, I'm going to save for the next 18 years so that they'll have a college fund to go to school. And you don't make it 18 years. Well, you need some life insurance potentially to complete that plan. What about your retirement plan? If you have an idea that you need $1 million or $2 million at retirement, which you'd have to do some planning to figure out what that number is, and you're sitting at about 100 and you still have a 30-year time horizon, you better have a self-completing plan by having some life insurance. The other thing about insurance, and this is a strong opinion of mine, don't rely on your employer for all of your life insurance. Why do I want to tie my paycheck, my health insurance, my retirement accounts, and my life insurance all to the same cat? Because things change. People move. And a lot of times you can't take that insurance with you. And if you can't take it with you, but you still need some life insurance and you're not insurable, you're up the creek without a paddle. So there's things that I always say, you know what, take the basic stuff the employer will offer you for free, but always buy your life insurance separately. Buy it on your own. It's your policy, right? That's just a strong, strong opinion of mine. The other thing you can use insurance for, life insurance, is as a savings plan. We've had David McKnight, the author of Power of Zero, on several times. He's a big proponent of creating a mega, he would call it a mega tax-free type retirement account. The idea is that you buy as little insurance as possible, cram as much money into it as possible, let it grow, and then take it out tax-free in the form of distributions and or loans. Then when you die, the death benefit pays off the loans, which I'm going to get to a little bit later on how tax-free loans really are. And then whatever the residual amount is can go to your family. The other thing people think about is, you know what, I want to spend all my money. I have a situation just like this. I have a client that wanted to leave $1 million to each of her three kids. So this happens all the time. I'm like, okay, we can handle that. We'll put this much money into this policy. It will guarantee a $3 million death benefit. And you'll be surprised how little amount you may have to put in. Sometimes you look at it and like, how does this even work? But it's based on your health and, you know, you get ratings and stuff like that. But anyway, she stuck that aside and said, okay, I'm shelving that as done. The $1 million, tax-free, by the way, life insurance tax-free, most protected tax code, I think, in the entire business, 7702. That's the nerd in me coming out. but then it's like you have the freedom to spend all the rest of your money. If your only objective was to leave them that much money, go spend the rest of it. It gives you permission to do that. That's kind of like creating an estate, so to speak. Now, the other thing, if you're in business, like if you have partners or you're a key person in a business, you have to have life insurance to fund a buy-sell arrangement. It's maybe to fund the business. If you're the primary driver of that business, and if you're gone, how do the revenues go? Maybe if you're in a relationship business and you died, how many of the relationships in that business would go somewhere else? So you definitely need life insurance for that type of an arrangement. The other thing is, and this is huge. So you can own it throughout your life, and it has different purposes. So I'm young, married, debt, kids, right? So I'm looking at completion of plans. I'm looking at paying things off. I'm looking at all that. Then you get into the phase, maybe I'm getting into retirement. Maybe my house is paid off. Well, what's the purpose now? Well, if you have a large estate, it could potentially pay for estate taxes. If you want to leave tax-free money, at this point, if you've already got it, you've got it, right? You don't want to just drop it. But the main thing that a lot of the newer policies offer is a long-term care benefit. So let's say you have $1 million policy and you can't perform 2 of your 6 activities of daily living. That's like transferring, bathing, eating, going to the bathroom, things like that. Or you have a moderate cognitive issue like a dementia or Alzheimer's. Then you can go what they call on claim. And the policies like that I own will offer up 24% of my death benefit in the form of a long-term or critical illness type of payment. It's tax-free, comes to my mailbox, I get to do with it what I want, I don't have to be in a skilled facility, I don't have to jump through a bunch of hoops. That's the way it works. So I guess what I'm saying is, no matter what age or stage you're in, there's always a real case for owning insurance for one reason or another. And Jim, I'm going to put you on the spot. You're a single guy.
Yep.
You've got dependents as dogs.
Dogs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you have life insurance?
I do.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And so tell me, and again, we didn't talk about this,
right.
So you don't have to answer, but I'm putting you on the spot.
You're fine.
So why do you own life insurance?
Life insurance because I do own property, as you said, so I want to make sure that the house gets paid off and whatnot. Obviously, and I think a lot of people have the mindset that you need to have money to bury yourself.
Yeah.
Whatever that's going to be.
Again, not leaving obligations for other people.
Right. So it kind of boils down to that. I think also, you know,
you don't want Jody just to kick your sister Jody kick you off in the in the river.
Exactly. I mean, you never know.
That could happen.
That's a couch discussion for an hour. No, I'm kidding. But you know, the other thing is that you do. Most people want to leave some kind of legacy. They want to be, they have a charitable heart, a charitable mind in some fashion. They may want to leave something to, obviously kids, grandkids or whatever, but there may be an organization, you know, that family was touched by.
Right.
And they want to leave something for them. So it's really just a personal decision of how much you want to do. And as you were talking about the client with the $3 million of what you want to have happen when you pass away.
Yeah, I think everyone needs it. Again, rule of thumb, 8 to 12 times your annual income. That's not concrete. I think you look at your own situation. Maybe you have some term insurance that gets you through a certain stage, some permanent insurance that gets you through the next stage, because there are different types of insurance. Everyone gets sold on the idea of term, right? Term's out, usually before you do. LIMRA, which is the folks that track all this, say that less than 1% of all term policies actually result in a death claim. So that's why it's so stinking cheap. They never pay any death claims. So you can move into something called a universal life, which is built on an annual renewable term chassis, but it gives you the opportunity to make it permanent so it never terms out as long as you fund it properly. You can buy whole life. Some people would say it's like throwing money in a hole. That's what they used to tell me when I was young. And I'm like, no. It's like a big bond portfolio. If you do it right and do it long enough, in the beginning it kind of stinks because you look at it and like, this is going nowhere, but give it time. Some of the clients that I inherited that had old life insurance policies, old whole life from great companies, it's one of their biggest and best assets that they have. They were able to do a lot of things with that. You have variable universal life, which means instead of putting it into an index, which can't lose money, will make money if the market goes up, you know, minus the cost of the term insurance, it's invested in sub-accounts that are similar to like mutual funds. So there's a lot of different ones. I personally am not a big VUL or variable universal life fan because I want my insurance to be safe. I want it to be secure. I want it to be there if I need it. Well, variable universal life, if you went through it, which I was around, by the way, and it was super popular back in the 90s, when you go through a 2000, 2001, 2002, and you lost in your life insurance contract, well, you're not putting enough, you can't put enough money in to save this thing. And you still want it, you still need it. So, again, opinion. I'm sure there's people listening that have a different opinion, and that's okay. I'm just using my nearly 30 years of experience, countless client situations, and my personal preference, okay? That's how I'm making that choice. All right, speaking of businesses early on, interesting article on Elon Musk this week on how he borrowed money from SpaceX rather than selling stock to raise capital when he bought Twitter And I'm thinking, well, okay, why? I knew why he was doing it, but tell me, I'm going to say, why would he do that? I'll be right back and explain it more. This is Your Money with David Hayes. Welcome back, everyone. Oh, Alex, turn that music down. I have football practice tonight. Thursday night's football night. And, yes, I'm still trying to coach youth football. I don't have the time like I used to plan for. I had planned a retirement in the year 2020 when I turned 50 after coaching for
years
and years and years.
Yeah.
But 2020 was canceled, football season.
Mm-hmm.
I was turning 50. My son was graduating, you know, high school in 2019. I thought, okay, I'm going to start getting some of my time back.
Yeah.
Well, I can't quit now, so I had to go back to 21. Had a great year in 2021, and I'm like, well, next year, 2022, I'm going to kind of phase out. I'll help, but I'm going to phase out. Well, it didn't work out because it just didn't work out. Mm-hmm. One of the coaches couldn't do it, so I was all in 2022. This year, I'm like, Ted, I coached with Ted. Ted, I cannot be counted on 100% of the time. And guess what? I've been almost every practice. I did miss our first game, which mm-hmm. we won by two, thankfully. I'm going to miss this Sunday's game because I'm officiating a wedding up in Indy, and then we're all meeting to go to the Colts game in the afternoon. So he'll mm-hmm. be fine. He'll be fine. But cool. Tonight is football night, and thank goodness it's not 100 degrees like we've been fighting for the last month or so.
What age are these boys, by the way?
They are 8 and 9.
Okay.
I've got 1 7-year-old on the team.
Okay.
Yeah. They're fun. I mean, you know, they're 3rd and 4th graders for the most part. 1 second grader.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it is. It's a lot of fun. All right. And if you want to know why I do it, number one, I love coaching. Number two, I love kids. Number three is part of my story, because if you read my book, 2025, The Final Drive, you'll understand that it was my Little League football coach that took a chance on me that I really, truly believe led me on a path where I am today. So if you haven't read the book, read it. You can read the first chapter. You don't have to read any more if you don't want. But if you do want to read it all, it's an hour and 40 minutes read. And that's if you're a slow reader. I actually read a book for a friend last night. It took me about 2 days. But he wanted to write a book, and mm-hmm. he follows me all the time, podcasts, everything. I don't know him great, but he's a sharp young guy. And his name of his book is called I Hate Taxes. And it's actually really good. It doesn't give you a lot of real material, but a lot of like hands stuff, like what you can do. But it's really good. And I gave him a text last night and said, Joe, I think you did a great job, but I found one mistake. And page 38 at the very bottom, he said that the tax code expires at the end of 2026. I'm like, dude, no, it's the end of 2025. You better correct it. Because he wanted me to read it before it got published.
Sure.
So that's what I did. But anyway, everyone hates taxes, right?
Amen.
Everyone hates taxes.
You think Elon does too?
Elon hates taxes. He hates a lot of things.
He's interesting.
He's an interesting cat. I'd like to hang out with him sometime. I think that would be fun. All right, so here's the thing. When Elon Musk borrowed money from SpaceX, he did that when he was trying to raise capital by Twitter, which Twitter's not even called Twitter now, right?
It's X.
Oh, it's called X.
That's what it is.
Okay. Well, whatever.
Yeah.
I'm not really active on Twitter, but I think
glance at it occasionally.
Every once in a while.
Not too many people like X, but
well, one thing was he didn't want to sell his equity, and because if he sold his equity, he'd have to pay tax, and he hates tax. So he borrowed the money from SpaceX, and borrowed money is not taxable. Similar to borrowing money out of your 401k, borrowing it out of your life insurance policies, all of that, it's not taxable. Then you can pay it back whenever you want to. And if you own the company and they had a legitimate agreement in place, you know, you can arrange it however you want. Loans are not taxable. Pay it back. It's not an owner distribution. Just keep it on the books. If you loan money to your company, if you loan it to your company or you take money out, you can do that as a loan. And just that's the way you do it. I recently sold something. And I have a partner that I own it with, piece of real estate. And I realized at the end, no, I actually have 4 partners. I have number one, the bank. The bank gets paid first. Number two was me and my friend Doug. We got paid. And the fourth partner is the IRS. So the bank got the most money. Doug and I both got our checks. The bank the IRS check was bigger than both of our checks individually. Collectively, it was a little bit more. And I'm like, this stinks. I don't like paying taxes either. So I looked for every which way in the world to do it. And I realized, oh, yeah, many, many years ago, when that piece of property needed an injection of capital, I did not put it in as owner contribution. I made a loan to the company. So what happened when I got my money back out, it was a repayment of the loan that I made the company. And I was able to impute some interest on it over the, since 2008 when I did it, and come up with a big number. So I was able to pay a lot less tax than what I thought I was going to have to pay, simply because I did something smart years ago and said, I'm going to loan this money to my company. I'm not going to make an owner contribution. Now, if I made an owner contribution, you potentially over time could depreciate more and all this kind of stuff, but depreciation catches up with you eventually, and I'll talk more about that in the next segment. But borrowing money is not a bad thing. I even think sometimes, you know, right now I'm talking with one of my folks down in Texas about this situation. He needs money probably for 6 months, maybe a year. All he has is IRAs, and trust me, this is not someone I've known for a really long time. So, because had I known him for a really long time, he'd have some Roth IRAs as well. But he has traditional IRAs, and he needs something like $150,000 to buy a piece of property. I'm like, okay, well, we can take $150,000 out, and it's probably going to cost you, by the time we're all done, somewhere about $220,000 to get your $150,000, okay? Because he has to pay. Well, actually, it won't be that much because he lives in Texas. But nonetheless, whatever. It's called $220,000, $210,000. But he only needs it maybe for a year. So I'm like, okay, here's the thing. Go borrow the money. Because if you go borrow the money, even if you pay 8%, if you borrow $120,000 and you pay 8%, you're going to pay $8,000 in taxes, maybe a little bit more. In interest. That's a heck of a lot cheaper than paying, you know, $75,000 or whatever. So there are good reasons to borrow money. And I know when I'm not a big proponent of going to borrow money, I think there's good reasons when you borrow against your 401k. I think there's good reasons when you borrow from your company and pay it back. I think there's good reasons when you want to go where the money's the cheapest. And that's the key. I always say to people, where's the cheapest money? Not as cheap as it used to be. Jimmy, you just came out of banking. When you first got in, I mean, they were giving money away.
Yes, they were.
And then when you left, they were not giving it away.
No, every bank, and I mean, it's nothing against the banks at all, but everybody is looking for deposits right now for sure, and that's why you see a lot of higher interest rates on CDs and deposit accounts and so on. It's because everybody is looking to get cash back on the books.
There, right now, and this is off topic, but there's these things called brokered CDs, where if you're a bank in Idaho and you're trying to raise capital and you can't get enough deposits from your local base, then you'll put out this brokered CD, and it goes to every brokerage firm out there. Maybe it's $50 million, $100 million, whatever you need to raise, and they get sold out like that.
Mm-hmm.
The issue is that there's no loyalty to that bank. So when their CD matures in a year or 2 years, that person that lives in Indiana that bought this Idaho Bank of the mountains or whatever, says, well, I don't care about them. I'm just going to move, whatever. So there is a risk looming in that area. If we don't see rates turn over the next couple of years, the big worry about these regional banks, it's a legitimate worry,
yeah.
But that's why everyone's just starving for.
Hey, one quick question before we take a break.
You
talked about Elon gifting the money or whatever, or loaning the money, excuse me. So does it ever turn around and become a gift? Is there a time limit on that at all?
So you have to have... It has to be legitimate. So, yes, there is. You will never become a gift. It will always be a loan. And you have to impute some kind of an interest rate.
Okay.
And there are rules behind that, too. I'm not going to get into it, but it has to do with the, you know, federal da-da-da rate.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how you do it. Now, he already paid it back. Paid it back, yeah. So
okay.
He only had it out for, like, less than a year and paid it back. But if you think about it, had he borrowed... how much he borrowed. It was a lot, like $1 billion.
Yeah, I was going to say Twitter was not cheap.
It was a billion. It was a bunch, hundreds of millions of dollars. Had he sold stock in one of his companies, say Tesla or something else, he would have had to pay capital gains on all that tax gain. But he's like, let's just borrow it. I'll pay the reasonable interest rate. And he did. And then he paid it back. I'm not sure where he came up with the money to pay it back. I don't really care. But that's just the moral of the story. All right, let's take a quick break. Come back. I want to go back and talk about depreciation, because writing that big check to the IRS that we just did made me think about depreciation on real estate. So I'm going to come back and talk a little bit about that. If you are a rental property owner, If you're not, it may be still interesting to you, but it won't be applicable to you. We'll be right back. It's Your Money with David Hayes. Welcome back, everyone. Depreciation. All right, anyone that buys real estate, they're like, oh, yeah, you get the depreciation. And what does that mean? Well, every year I get to depreciate my asset. You can't depreciate dirt, but the asset over a pretty long period of time. And every year you get a deduction for that. And it can go off of your ordinary income. Now, there are passive loss limitations, which I won't get into that, but just the basics of how depreciation works. I think, just like in our tax-deductible IRAs and tax-deductible 401ks, we become addicted to it, like a sugar high, to this immediate deduction. The immediate depreciation is the same way. We get addicted to saving taxes at the expense of having to pay it back later. Because when you sell something, you have two different types of gains. You have capital gains, that's what you pay for it, and what you sold it for, or a loss, but hopefully it's a gain if you're selling it. Then you have recapture of depreciation. So let's say I've owned this asset for 20 years. I've depreciated it nearly 80%. Well, guess what? I have to pay tax on all that depreciation I took the deduction for. And it's at a higher rate than what capital gains are. So I always think about this. Do you depreciate it or not depreciate it? There are two different tax rates. You do get to, and for the most part, deducted off of your current taxes. So if you're at the 37% or soon to be 39.6, you might get a little arbitrage there because when you pay it back at 25% maximum. But who knows what tax rates are going to be? Who knows what your current tax rate is? I would just say step back and understand what depreciation is. Is it worth you taking it? You don't have to take it, but everyone does. It's like wired into the brains of our accountants that that's just what people do. Take the depreciation. You can always, you know, do some things on the backside to maybe avoid some paying some tax, but usually that requires you buying something else and maybe you don't want to do that. But that's the way it works. Remember, you still get stepped up cost basis on things. So if you decide not to sell something, you can, you know, die with it and then someone gets it and you get a stepped up cost basis. I did an entire podcast on stepped up cost basis and I think it was really good. It was even within families and things like that. So I was talking about this with someone the other day and really promoting the tax-free treatment of life insurance. And they were like, well, but couldn't that change as well? And like I said earlier, I don't think so. You know, I'm pretty good at gauging what's going on in Washington and what's likely to happen and what's not likely to happen. Because the IRS code that life insurance falls under is 7702. And I really believe it's the most protected code out there. However, they have tried a few things in a little whack-a-mole with life insurance. Every once in a while it comes up. They never talk about taxing the death benefit, but they have talked about taxing the increase in the cash value annually in your life insurance, but no, so far to no avail. That's just something that I think could possibly come about at some point, but I just don't know that many people in the country use the life insurance as an accumulation vehicle, especially with the Roth IRAs. Because if you're doing it for accumulation only, you can do Roth IRAs, Roth 401ks. But some people who do this have a lot more money they want to put away. And there are but not any significant limitations on what you can put into a life insurance policy. So it's usually more about the death benefits, something like 20 times your net worth or something like that. So this is really a wealthy person's tool for the most part. People that have more money to save than what they can shove into their Roth 401ks and things like that. And because the life insurance has the tax-free distribution, so does a Roth, right? But it also has the other benefits like, you know, the tax-free treatment for maybe long-term care or something like that. So, you know, everyone's different, but that's the only thing I can think of that's a little bit like whack-a-mole is they have in the past tried to increase or tax the increase in the cash value of life insurance. Now, that's like when I'm preaching and everyone understands like taxes have to go up in the future, right? Well, That is true, but it doesn't just have to be income taxes. There's all of those other taxes out there that could also be implemented. Maybe a national sales tax. It could be another, some sin tax. It could be, in, you know, the tax on the increase of cash value of life insurance. I don't know where it's all going to come from. It's got to come from somewhere. I was actually listening to a senator the other day talk about the calamity that's coming. And it's not like none of them know about the calamity that's coming. I don't know when it's going to happen, when, but at some point, when you're $50 trillion in debt, where does it end? 60, 70, 80, 100 trillion in debt? Where does it end? And at some point, there's going to be people, and I say people, countries, insurance companies, everyone say, I'm not taking that bet anymore. I'm not going to buy any more of this debt. It's way out of control. And at that point, you're going to have calamity. And it's going to be really nasty, ugly, and it's not going to be fun. It's going to be like the worst, you know, the worst thing you've ever seen in your life. I just hope I'm dead by the time it happens. And I hope my son, I mean, it's a bad deal. I was out at IU last year speaking to a young group at the Kelly School, and I was trying to tell them about what's going on. Mm-hmm. You know, they don't know. They don't know what $30 trillion is. They don't know what leaving them $50 or $100 trillion in debt is. But all I said to them was, I am sorry. I am sorry, but this is what we're leaving you with. But here's what you can do. The only thing you can do is never, ever, ever at your age put money away tax deferred, because at some point you're going to have to pull it out. You're going to have to pay the tax at an ungodly rate that we have no idea what it will be. So make sure you understand this. So I went through the basics of Roth and things like that. It was pretty cool. I actually had some former football players in there that I coached when they were 8 and 9 years old. That shows you how old I am.
Were you the one that talked a few weeks ago at a workshop about the million and the billion and the trillion of, like, how many seconds that would be?
Yeah.
And, like, it's unimaginable how many.
Yeah. If a dollar was 1 second, then, mm-hmm. then I walked through that it would, that $1 trillion represents 37,000 years.
Right.
And that we are 30 times that, really 32 times that already in debt. And you just look at it, and you're like, how this? I mean, it's currently insurmountable. Mm-hmm. But when you look at the next 10 years, and we're expected to spend an extra $1 trillion a year for every year for the next 10 years, then you throw the interest on the debt that's now doubled from where it was before. I mean, it's just the math just doesn't add up. So that's why, guys, listen, I'm not trying to be one way or another. I'm just trying to be straight with you to say, listen, if you are putting money away tax deferred, meaning you think that you're going to be in a lower tax rate in the future, then all by means do it. But if you're like me and understand math, you need to have a serious amount of money set away that you've already paid the tax on. You've paid the bill, you're done. That partner, the IRS, is out of your life, and your money's your money. And like I said, your family will thank you. The IRS will thank you for doing it now. And like I think I've told maybe here on the radio too, but I said when I did I'm 53, 63, 73, and mm-hmm. I talked about me doing that $200,000 Roth conversion. If you want to be assured that your kids or grandkids come visit your graveside, do a Roth conversion now, because when it doubles every 10 years at 7.2%, and I'm 53 and at 63, a 200 would be 400, and at 73, you know, you just do the math, 800, 1.6, 3.2, and then they can keep it for another 10 years and it turns into $6 million plus dollars with a single $200,000 conversion. When I'm 53, your kids are coming to visit your grave. They're going to say, thank you, Daddy. Thank you very much. All right, Jimmy, let's take a break. Come back. Talk about some of the big things we have coming up. It's Your Money with David Hayes. All right, Jimmy, we are running short of time, and so I'll take one more break. So tell us what's going on. Tell us what's coming up on the show in 3 minutes or less.
In 3 minutes or less. So next couple of weeks, we're working on those. But at the end of the month, Lance Like is going to be doing a show on estate planning. David talked about that a little bit ago. Question and answer show. We're looking at trying to get those the first week of every month. If you've got a question, again, cfci.us. Click the contact us over there. Ryan McEwen, he's part of your EdSlot group, is going to be joining us mid-October. And then at the end of next month, Jerry Sedler, co-author of Don't Retire, Rewire. Great book. She's been a guest on many, many times. Will be joining us here as well.
She's got some updated versions since we had her on the very, very mm-hmm. first time. So it's definitely something to look forward to. Jerry Sedler, she's a great guest, and great to reconnect with her. I hadn't talked with her for a while. And then also we have retirement planning today coming up at Ivy Tech. Doug Hughes will be teaching that. I have a taxes and retirement workshop at Ivy Tech in October. Mm-hmm. We're doing an estate 101 in our office, dealing with dementia at our office. We've got a trunk or treat coming up, but that's really just for our community.
Private event.
Yep. Yeah. And so it's going to be a really busy spring.
Fall. Wow. I was like, man, I've only been here 6 weeks. Give me a minute to get to the spring.
Well, when you gave me this calendar of things coming up, I'm like, Jesus, I mean, the end of the year is like right around
the
corner. So, all right, let's take a quick break. Come back. We'll wrap this show up. It's Your Money with David Hayes. All right, guys, final few minutes left in today's program. So our Estate Planning 101, we're going to have Lance on the show. Dustin Plummer, another outstanding estate planning attorney here in Bloomington, will be the guest at our office doing that Estate Planning 101. Mm-hmm. I was trying to spread the love out a little bit. I just had a call while I came into the or I had a text from a friend of mine. They know, like, they just to call me because they're like, okay, I have a property dispute. Who should I call? Here's the guy. He's mm-hmm. the best at the property disputes. Another one, you know, I have a mom that we may have to consider moving into Bell Trace. I got a guy for that. Mm-hmm. So every attorney brings a little different spin. I mean, you can have the general practitioner, all of them have that to a certain degree, but some of them have specialties that they're really good at or have just made that their thing. So anyway, I'm happy to give recommendations. I'm not afraid of that. So if you ever are in a predicament and need to know which attorney to call, we have a lot of good friends out there. Just, again, email us. We like to be a resource for everyone, cfci.us. Big weekend this weekend, Friday night, Bloomington High School South and North tee off. The Hoosiers are playing the Terre Haute School, Indiana State. And our old stomping grounds, the Mustangs, uh-huh. are taking on Owen Valley, and I heard Owen Valley's really good.
I've heard some challenges with the Mustangs this year starting off, but We'll see what happens.
Yeah. I mean, a new coach, some players didn't come back. That's just the way it goes, but I'm rooting for the Mustangs because Jimmy and I went there. It was many, many years ago that I played there. I was there, and I played in 1985, 86, and 87. That was my 3 years of quarterbacking at Edgewood. Mm-hmm. And great times. Great memories, great times.
And now you get to officiate another wedding this weekend.
I am going to be up in Indianapolis officiating my good friend George Shermer's daughter's wedding, Kelsey. So that's a real honor. Spent about 2 hours on that this week on Tuesday night. And then we're heading to the Colts game on Sunday. And, yeah, it'll be a fun weekend.
Where's the wedding at?
Downtown? Like the Regions from? Building, I think, downtown. Oh. They have some venue way up top. So nice. I don't know. I'm not in charge of that. I just need to show up. And hopefully do a great job. And I always say, lead with your heart, right? And then get in their head, and then give them the hands, which how to deal with stuff, and end with your heart. Heart, head, that's hands, awesome. Heart. Always leave people with a feeling of inspiration. That's always my hope. All right, guys, have a great weekend. It's going to be a busy one. Take care. We'll see you next week. Bye-bye.
The preceding program was brought to you by Comprehensive Financial Consultants and CFCI, which is solely responsible for its content. Securities are offered through J.W. Cole Financial, member FINRA and SIPC. Investment advice offered through CFCI and J.W. Cole Advisors. J.W. Cole Financial, J.W. Cole Advisors, and CFCI are unaffiliated entities.